Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. So down in Florida, the state is melting down. Ron DeSantis was confronted by a reporter who asked him about these seven children who are in the intensive care unit, just in one hospital, the Joe DiMaggio Children's Hospital in Broward County, fighting for their lives in the ICU. What about these kids? And DeSantis said, and I quote, "This has been a really negative thing throughout this whole thing with some of these, quote, experts, some of the media. Somebody can contract a highly transmissible airborne virus and they're viewed as having done something wrong. That's just not the way you do it." End quote. In other words, word salad, right? It's like, you know, well, you know, kids are dying, Governor DeSantis, and you signed a law that says that you can't, that when we go back to school, we can't keep our kids safe from each other, or keep our teachers safe for that matter, or keep the kids safe from the teachers, or vice versa. I mean, you know, whoever might have an infection. And everybody's like trying to figure out, why would DeSantis do this? Why, you know, in Arkansas, Asa Hutchinson, the governor, just yesterday held a press conference in which he said, you know, it was a mistake for us. I'm paraphrasing here, but you can find the exact quotes online. I said, basically, it was a mistake for us to have signed this law, making it impossible to get, you know, or making it illegal for teachers to require kids to wear masks. And he's walking it back, but DeSantis, oh no. Why? Well, it all has to do with this Republican brand identity that started in 1980 with Ronald Reagan. You could argue it started a little before that when Reagan ran for governor of California back in the late 60s or early 70s, whenever that was. And I believe it was the early 70s. And Reagan's brand was basically, he called it rugged individualism, self-reliance, right? And you know, his brand was a smile and a cowboy hat and a horse. And yeah, we're the ones who won the West, right? Actually, winning the West, in quotes, was the largest, first of all, it involved the largest genocide in the history of the world, the genocide of Native Americans. Secondly, it wasn't, you know, self-reliant pioneers who did it. It was the U.S. Army. Third, it cost a damn fortune. Just the veterans' benefits for the veterans who had served in the Indian extermination wars was, you know, about $3 billion in today's money. It was $118 million for the people who served between 1893 and 1957. And that was to provide, to steal land from Indians, to provide homes for, you know, homesteads for 372,659 people. It was absurd. It was the biggest of the big government programs, but somehow this is their mythology. And out of that mythology, they have come up with this, this gauzy, whitewashed history of America. And I'm writing about this at HartmanReport.com this morning. You can read the whole rant there, complete with links. With this triumvirate of balanced budgets, personal responsibility and small government. And balanced budgets, of course, is what the Republicans trot out every time the Democrats want to spend money to help individuals, to help people, to help in particular low-income people or working-class people. Oh, my God, we can't do that. I think we're all figuring out what the Republican philosophy is. When you give extra money to rich people, good things happen. They create jobs, don't you know? They're job creators. So we need to cut their taxes and give them billions of dollars in subsidies, whatever industry they're in. If it's defense, if it's oil, if it's coal, if it's gas, whatever it may be, just throw money at them. Rich people, they need more money. But if you give money to working class people, if you raise Social Security benefits, if you give money to poor people, oh my God, disasters are going to happen. They're the moochers, don't you know? It's the criminal class. You can't do that. I mean, this is literally what they have been selling us since Reagan became president. Give money to rich people, they create jobs. Give money to poor people, you get a disaster. What's astonishing to me is that so many Americans have bought this for 40 years. I mean, the IRS estimates that the morbidly rich among us are hiding over $1 trillion a year that they should be paying in taxes. That's criminal tax fraud. $1 trillion a year. And the IRS can't find them because the Republicans have cut the IRS budget to the point where they can't hire the kinds of auditors that are necessary to audit rich people. And so if you own a small business and you have a home office deduction, you're more likely to be audited than if you're Jeff Bezos or, you know, some other billionaire. And maintaining that level of subsidy for rich people takes away money that could be used for working class and poor people, which takes us to, that's balanced budgets, then that takes us to personal responsibility, which is their shtick. You know, the old joke that they used to tell on the Limbaugh show, what do you do for someone when they're down? You kick them, otherwise they'll never get up, right? This is their philosophy. You don't help people, you hurt people, and that hurting them will cause them to somehow stand up on their own two feet. And, you know, this is the old trope that white supremacists have been using forever to explain why people who are the victims of structural racism in our educational system, our housing system, our legal system, you know, why they're having a tough time hitting the American dream. This, you know, it also, by the way, gives them a convenient out to ignore the plight of even poor white people like in Appalachia. Personal responsibility. Actually, if it's all about personal responsibility, then we don't need to do anything about homelessness. We don't need to do anything about, you know, any of these folks who are in trouble, right? Because, hey, they're responsible. Healthcare? That's not our job. It's personal responsibility. Do your own appendectomy. You can do it at home. And then, you know, the size of government, big government, right? Government spending is about 14% of GDP in the United States. It's 25% of GDP in Sweden. Sweden is a democracy. I am not hearing Swedish elected officials saying, gee, we need to cut the size of our government. Let's do away with our national health care program. Let's not subsidize, you know, college for our students any longer. You're not hearing it. I mean, yeah, there's some fringe crackpots who are saying that, but this is what DeSantis is doing, is he's pushing this whole shtick. This whole classic Republican, Reagan, sloganeering, personal responsibility, rugged individualism BS. And, you know, so, hey, you know, if you can't defend yourself against a virus, what are you, some kind of wimp wearing a mask? This is their pitch. Ted Cruz, single-handedly in the United States Senate, I mean, what is wrong with this, right? Ted Cruz single-handedly blocked even a discussion about the For the People Act, help guarantee the people have the right to vote. These people don't like democracy. They don't want democracy. They want oligarchy. They want the billionaires who own them to be the only power in this country. They hate and fear we the people. It's just that simple. We'll be right back. Nancy in Minneapolis. Hey, Nancy, thanks for listening to KTNF. What's up?
So I'm a nurse in Minneapolis in a hospital with COVID. So I've been living with this in the belly of the beast for over a year and a half. And I get so irritated with Florida and all these other states that aren't following. But if there's a law, we have a public health law. And one section that really stuck out to me was, so it's Title 42, Section 70.2, which is titled Measures in the Event of Inadequate Local Control. And it's saying that states need to have control over this pandemic. Otherwise, the CDC can say, this needs to stop. So we need to follow the law. And I would like to
see... So, Nancy, if I like just this, to so I clearly understand what you're saying. You're saying that there's a federal law that says that if a state fails to protect their citizens in a public health emergency, yep, the federal government can step in. Is that the essence of what you're saying?
Yes. Okay. That's right. The CDC can take over. And I think that Florida should be quarantined. I think we need to border that place off and say nobody goes in except for essential supplies and nobody gets out. And you will hear places like Disney screaming like a scorched cat, mm-hmm, as soon as you start doing that. So you got to hit the commerce. But I'm not a lawyer. There are penalties, though, for allowing a pandemic just to go on and on.
Yeah.
And we've got to follow the law.
Not to mention the penalty of dead children and adults all across the country.
Exactly. Yeah.
Nancy, thank you. That was
brilliant.
I appreciate
thank
your
you.
Feedback, and I really appreciate the information. Tess in Denver. Hey, Tess, we have a little more than a minute left. What's in this hour? What's up?
To echo what the previous caller was saying, like, what are the penalties? You know, like, where, at what point is it criminal for people in positions of authority and power? We know how much people are just believe people who are in positions of authority. Look at the Milgram experiment. We know that, like, you know, so at what point does it become, you know, is their negligence and their lies and their misinformation that is literally killing people? At what point is that criminal, or is that, are there repercussions? I mean, I wasn't in the impression that free speech meant we could, you know, spew lies and manipulate people in ways that threaten their life. I didn't know that that's what they meant by free speech when they wrote the Constitution. So I'm just confused about.
Yeah, well, Tess, a lot's going to depend on local prosecutors or on people who are the victims of this. I mean, you know, the whole libertarian ideology is you can solve all problems with the courts. Well, somebody whose kid died of COVID in Florida or Texas needs to be suing the governor of those states for wrongful death. And if a prosecutor wants to pick it up and add a criminal charge to it, you know, good on them.
Has any of that happened yet?
Not to the best of my knowledge. Not to the best of my knowledge. And I think that there are 400,000 Americans who should have the ability to sue Donald Trump for that. Although there is this thing called sovereign immunity, which makes it damn near impossible to sue a public official. But, you know, there have to be reasonable limits to that. Tess, thank you for the call. I share your outrage. And you expressed it very, very well. Thank you so much for the call. Steve in Los Angeles. Hey, Steve, what's up?
Hey, Tom. What you say is 100% correct. It's clearly a class war. It's always has been a class war. Anyone who's read Chomsky knows already that the important thing is that the government is in the way of big business's ability to totally control everything.
Yep.
Only the government is big enough and powerful enough to counter them. So by controlling the government or minimizing the government, it clears the field for them to do what they want to do. My problem with all of this is why the Democrats, which is supposed to be the party of the working man, party of the poor, why haven't they countered this? Why have they allowed this to go on for 40 or 50 years, like you say? We're basically unrepresented as long as the Democrats are run by these
by the same forces, the same people. Here's what happened, Steve. You know, Reagan became the champion for this in 1980, and at that point in time, you know, Jimmy Carter was flirting with neoliberalism, but by and large, the Democratic Party was still the party of organized labor. A third of America had good union jobs, and that was the principal source of funding for the Democratic Party. 8 years later, or really 12 years later, by the end of the Reagan and Bush administrations, union membership in America had gone from about a third down to around 10%, 10 or 11%. It had collapsed. And along with it had collapsed the funding for the Democratic Party. At the same time, the oil shock had worn off by 1982. We had 11.5% inflation in 1981, and it was down to 3% in 1982. Now, the reason for that was because the Arab oil embargo of 1973-74, that is what produced that 8 years of inflation. And by that time, by 82, it had kind of wrung itself out of the economy. But Reagan got the credit for that. And so all these neoliberal policies of free trade and gutting unions and ending welfare as we know it and tough on crime policing, all those you know, Republican and neoliberal policies were actually very popular in the late 80s. And so when Bill Clinton came along in 92, he just adopted them. The Democratic Party got in bed basically with the same billionaires, not necessarily the same, because the Democrats wanted to be with clean industry like tech, you know, and banking and insurance, and leave the poison industries, you know, steel and chemicals and pesticides and weapons manufacturing, leave that to the Republicans. That was the equation that they made in the 90s. So, you know, we had a decade and a half or so, or two decades, where the Democratic Party was as tightly embracing neoliberalism as were the Republicans. And Joe Biden is the first Democratic president since Jimmy Carter to reject neoliberalism. And so we're in the process, the Democratic Party, of walking back from that poison, you know, not drinking that poison anymore, not drinking that Kool-Aid anymore. But we still have people like, you know, Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema who are there, who are taking money from the same people.
Right, they're holdovers, but that is the only chance we have is for people. I mean, Biden is basically a moderate himself, but hopefully he's seen the importance of giving the progressives more power, because that's really the only thing that can combat the corporatists and the big business. And the Republicans have always been better organized, and they're great at executing their plans because they're desperate. They need to be. They know they're a minority, and they know they need to be better. Democrats need to counter that and put their numbers to work, because that's what our advantage is. We have more people than they do.
I agree. And I think that the other advantage Republicans have is that the Republican Party, as is the case with conservative parties all over the world, is more attractive to people who are authoritarian followers, which is about 20% of any population. People just they are perfectly willing. In fact, they're anxious to surrender their personal will and power to an authority figure. And that's why the old saying, Republicans fall, Democrats fall in love, Republicans fall in line. And
Democrats need better PR.
I'm with you. Steve, I got to move along, but thank you for the call. You said it very, very well. Arthur in Chicago. Hey, Arthur, what's on your mind?
In California, they're talking about recalling Governor Newsom,
right?
Which I think is so ludicrous. It's the Republican, probably based antics.
There's a reason for this, too, Arthur. The reason is Dianne Feinstein, who's 88 years old. And if anything happens to her, she gets replaced by the governor. If they can put a Republican in that governor's seat, that's probably the main reason why they're focused on this.
Okay. Now I understand more. I didn't realize she was that old.
Yeah.
I know she was up there, but wow.
She's pushing 90.
Wow.
And she's losing it. I'll just say that right up front. I think she should have resigned. I think she should resign today.
I think there's a lot of them in Washington, D.C. that need to resign that are losing it or have already lost it. But my question is, Tom, if you know anything about this, in Florida and in Texas, why aren't there Democrats? Why aren't there people who are grieving for the loss of their loved ones because of misinformation and the continual misinformation by these governors? Why isn't there a recall? What is the recall process in those states to put some heat under these guys instead of letting them just talk all this nonsense every time?
That's a damn good question, Arthur. I don't know the answer to that. The California recall process, of course, we're all familiar with because we saw it with Gray Davis. That's how we got Arnold Schwarzenegger, which, again, was pushing out a Democrat and bringing in a Republican. And they did it the same way that they're expecting to do this one with Gavin Newsom, which is that, you know, the recall election is a special election. So only the really animated partisans will show up. You know, and the most recent polling shows that Newsom probably will be recalled. just because not because, you know, the majority of Californians want him out, but because the majority of Californians are not going to bother showing up for a special election that only, you know, foaming at the mouth Republicans care about. But what the system is for initiating a recall in Texas and Florida, I don't know. That would depend on the state constitution and the state laws. But you raise a fascinating question. And hopefully somebody who lives in Florida or Texas or somebody who knows the laws of those states, and my apologies, Arthur, that I don't, will call in and inform us. And if not, at the end of the day today, when I get off the air, I'll look it up and I'll report back to you tomorrow. Arthur, thank you. That was a brilliant question. Dave in Federal Way, Washington. Hey, Dave, what's on your mind today?
Bill Kristol said that Trumpers in the conservative movement are the hippies of the conservative movement. And another thing George Will said, he said that Republican politicians not only fear their voters, they don't like them. Now, all of that seems counterintuitive, but not if you think about something I said one time. I said that the Magna Carta is the same as critical race theory. Why did I say that? Well, the Magna Carta is considered a great document now, but back then they hated it. There were British nobles that were used to a feudal system. They were like, what? My all the rights come from me. That's why when Donald Trump was president, they kept saying that so-and-so serves at the pleasure of the president. Look, democracy and representative government have not worked for George Will and the billionaire Republicans. It has not worked for the poor ones. So what they're trying to do is mix patriarchy, feudalism, and bottom line is they're all reverting back to that, but it's not going to work. The lords of the manor are going to be fascist. And the reason why I say that is because they're trying to align everything instead of a bloodline. They're trying to align it with corporate interests, the tribe, the tribalism. The tribe is corporate.
Right. And they always have been. I mean, you know, this has always been the case. Dave, thank you. Jeff in Spanaway, Washington. Hey, Jeff, what's up?
Hey, I just wanted to tell you, I was so proud. I talked to my kid here, and I'm an proud IBEW member. Mm-hmm. My boy just got he's been in the Boilermaker Union now for a little bit. And one thing he said was, to me, we were talking, and a lot of your talking points, he says, we have separation of church and state in the Constitution. Shouldn't we have the separation of, sounds like we should have the separation of corporation and state.
There were a number of founders who actually argued for that.
They used to call it bribery, right?
Yes, exactly. And now it's called free speech, corporate free speech. Your kid is brilliant, Jeff.
I know it. I love him. Okay. Hey, and I love your show. Take care, Tom.
Thank you. Thank you so much for the call. Mike in Bailey, Colorado. Hey, Mike, what's up?
Mesa County, Colorado. Our Secretary of State has reported that their passwords for their voting machines have been posted on a conservative website.
I know.
And they don't know if it's inside job or if they got hacked, but they are investigating it. And another thing, a friend of mine just let me know his 27-year-old son died from this damn COVID.
Oh, man. That is so unfortunate. I'm so sorry to hear that. Yeah,
this stuff's touching us all. I'm sorry. It is.
Yeah, this is a terrible, terrible disease. Mike, thanks a lot for that, and thanks for the update on Colorado. I've been following that story, and it's going to be real interesting to see what they're going to have to do about that. Presumably, they're just going to change the passwords.
But it's going to give the Repubs here another swing at going after the Dominion voting machines. They're already, I can see it ramping up right now.
Yeah. Well, that was what precipitated it. There was some Republican who was some conspiracy nut who was going on and on about this, and the screenshot of what they did, as I recall, included because they were on the tabulator computer, if I'm remembering correctly, and the screenshot had the password on it, and that. Mm-hmm. And that was the point at which, and the screenshot was purported to prove how easy it is to hack these machines and get into which it didn't do at all. I mean, they didn't succeed in making their point, but they did succeed in putting the password out for the world. And it's just like the crazy people in Arizona. I mean, it's nuts that the state Senate required Maricopa County to turn over the voting machines to this cyber ninja guy, this one guy who's got this little company that operates out of a post office box in Florida, and now they can't use those machines anymore.
And, hey, look at Ivanka Trump's patents in China. One was for voting machines.
I know. Actually, more than one was for voting machines. Yes, you're right, which is very strange. Very strange.
Yeah.
Mike, thank you for the call.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Ted in Sacramento, California. Hey, Ted, what's on your mind today?
Hey, I had a couple things. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
But why is it when you try to have a discussion, all they want to do is yell and scream over you and threaten you with violence? The constipation party?
Oh, you mean, are you trying to call into right-wing talk radio and getting hung up on? Is that the deal, Ted?
Every time.
Huh. They don't
Every
even want to.
If you say.
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, what I know as a talk show host, right? You know, I mean, this is actually a business and an art form or whatever you want to call it. That if I can engage in a debate with someone, not only is that like a good thing for my show because people slow down for fistfights and car wrecks. People, you know, want some entertainment and some conflict, but it also highlights the issues. It helps me get my point across more effectively than just, you know, droning on about it. It's far more dynamic. And so I would think that every right-wing talk host in America would be praying that liberals would be calling in so they could debate with them.
No, as soon as you debate or as soon as you bring up something that they just said, like I was talking to, can I say the radio show?
Sure.
It was Will Cow.
Yeah.
And he was going on about how you had to show your ID or your vaccine passport to buy a cup of coffee, and I said, where is this? Because I've never encountered that.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm a truck driver. I go pretty much the 11 Western, and nobody has asked me for my vaccine card anywhere.
Right.
I have it. If you ask me to wear a mask, that's what you want? Okay. Now, why are they so against that, but they were so pro that baker in Colorado that wouldn't bake a cake for a gay couple because it was against his beliefs?
I think it's kind of the same logic, which is, you know, my right to be a bigot supersedes your right to have a decent society from their point of view.
Well, let's look at the hypocrisy of that.
Yeah. I think it's pretty clear right at the surface, isn't it, Ted?
I think it is.
Yeah.
And then I'd like to say one more thing.
Sure, go for it.
If I could. I don't think Donald Trump will ever see a day in jail because of our symbol of justice. It's a blindfolded statue holding gold scale, and we've been led to believe that justice is blind and fair. What that tells me is justice is blind because it doesn't want to see who's putting the gold in the scale, and whoever puts the most gold in that scale tips it in their favor.
Yeah. Sadly, without going into the pros or cons of that metaphor or analogy, I agree with you. I think it's extremely unlikely that Donald Trump will go to jail. He has the resources to drag things out for years in our court system, which is what he has done literally his whole entire life. And I mean, he didn't want to pay $300 million back to Deutsche Bank, so he sued them, and they said, "Okay, you don't have to pay us." I mean, it's like there are still people from the '90s who. he didn't pay when they were doing work on his casinos, and they're still trying to bill him, and he's still, you know, stringing them along. So and if things get really bad, he's just going to hop on a plane to some other country.
Trust me, I have a friend up in Washington that did some work on the Taj Mahal.
Mm-hmm.
He did a whole bunch of neon signs for him.
Yeah.
He got a letter saying how great it was. Then he asked for payment, and they said, basically, sorry, not going to do it because your work was substandard.
Yeah, and that's...
And he's got those in his office. One says, great job. The other says, we're not going to pay you because it was substandard.
Yeah, that was standard operating practice for the Trump Organization, was to screw everybody that they worked with. And sadly, there was always, you know, somebody else in line who was willing to maybe I'll be the one that he'll actually pay. But just talk to any New Yorker. My best friend is a New Yorker, and they know who Donald Trump is. They've always known who Donald Trump is. That's why Donald Trump didn't win New York. And you would think, you know, it's his home state, right? You're supposed to win your home state. No, not a chance. So
here's the bottom line. Trump don't pay his bills.
Yeah, never did, never will. Ted, and now he's not paying Rudy Giuliani, and poor Rudy is broke. I mean, you know, this is just nuts. Ted, I got to move along, but thank you for the call. Mike in Millbridge, Maine. Hey, Mike, what's on your mind today?
Hi, Tom. I'd like to talk about the accountability of the voter suppression that's going on in southern states. They're enacting voter suppression to the point where no Democrat is going to be able to win an election. And I think that pretty much from what everything I'm hearing, people are living in their own reality in complete and denial of what's actually going on, which is the corporations and billionaires are conducting a coup d'etat against this country to turn it into a complete oligarchy without constitutional law. And they're using the Republican Party as their frontline military in that effect.
You're singing my song, though.
Yeah, I've heard you talk about this. Because basically what's going to happen is they are circling the wagons, and they're going to link their states together. And with the midterms coming up, they could add more Republicans to the Senate and take back the House, and then perhaps open things up in 24 for Trump.
Right. And, or somebody like him. I don't think that Trump is a major threat in 2024, but Josh Hawley, Rick Scott, Ted Cruz, Ron DeSantis. You've got a number of Republicans who are all, you know, heavily, shall we say, fascist-leaning, and all smarter and more competent politicians than Donald Trump, and they're all deeply in the pockets of the right-wing fossil fuel billionaires, and Trump is not any longer. So I think that's where the real threat is. But Mike, you nailed it, and this is the existential threat that America faces, and we've got to act. You know, we've got to own up to it. We've got to face it. We got to take it on, and that involves ending the filibuster and passing some legislation to guarantee the right to vote.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
I mean, Brian Kemp, as Secretary of State, threw 2 million people off the voting rolls in Georgia and then won an election by 50,000 votes. That's how they do it. Edward in Sierra Madre, California. Hey, Edward, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom, thanks for the opportunity to talk to you. Tom, I'm going to link up rudeness with the breakdown in not only our educational system, you know, our publicly funded schools, but also we're, you know, connecting that to people seeking information and news from social media, and, you know, and the increase of Fox and its stepchildren like Newsmax. We have a dumbing down of society. And when people are low-information individuals and they don't have, you know, a foundation of truth to build on, they get threatened and they become rude. And then you have the Newtons, I think it's his third law, you get the reaction for the action,
mm-hmm.
which is their rudeness someone like yourself or someone like me, and then we, you know, we curse or we, you know, your blood coagulates because you're so angry. But I look back to the Reagan presidency, like I heard you say earlier, and you could just see a slow-moving disinformation campaign and just society just accepting, you know, this,
oh, yeah, this trickle-down economics. Yeah, we bought it lock, stock, and barrel.
Yeah, and Tom, if I can just shout out to all the voters in California, need to get up, get out, and get this done, and do not allow Gavin Newsom to be recalled, or we're in big trouble. There's trouble in River City, Tom.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. They want a Republican governor so bad, and the minute they get one, the next step is going to be to drive Dianne Feinstein out of office if she doesn't drive herself out of office.
The playbook is there.
Yeah.
They've shown us.
Yep, and we saw it with Gray Davis and Arnold Schwarzenegger. Absolutely. Edward, thank you for the call. It's good to hear from you.
Thank you, Tom. Take care.
Yep. Joanne in Seattle. Hey, Joanne, what's on your mind today?
Hi, Tom. I was just wondering what your thoughts might be on a national advertising campaign regarding vaccinations, maybe telling the statistics of what has gone on with the vaccinations, what hasn't gone on, and showing a slideshow of children on ventilators.
Yeah. That's what's happening right now, Joanne. I mean, it's called the news. I mean, we're seeing that. And I think that, you know, we just, CNN was reporting about an hour ago that either yesterday or last week, I forget whether these are, I think they're daily numbers. We hit 500,000 vaccines delivered in whatever that period of time is. I'm pretty sure it was a day. And that's the highest we've seen in months, you know, since like May or June. And
that's great.
And it's because the news is reporting that young people are dying and, you know, people in their, parents of children and adults in their 20s, 30s and 40s who all thought that they were immune, that this was the boomer remover, are now realizing that the Delta variant is like a whole brand new disease and you are not immune to it. Even if you've had COVID before, you're not immune to it. And so they're going, maybe I should get vaccinated. Joanne, thank you for the call. I think it's a good idea that, you know, we'd be, you know, probably the ad council putting together PSAs like this. Dan in Altoona, Pennsylvania. Hey, Dan, what's up?
Hey, Tom, how are you today?
Good. What's on your mind?
Mitch McConnell came out and said that he was in favor of this bipartisan deal. I think that that's a flag to the Republicans in the House to vote for the infrastructure, the bipartisan infrastructure bill, overcome the progressives that are going to stand in the way of it, so thus making the progressives look like the bad guys again, and then they can use that to kill the $3.5 trillion plan, blow it out of the water. Even like I feel like Sinema and Manchin are already doing that right now. They already said they're not going to support the $3.5 trillion. So I think that this is all like I'm seeing everything line up like every other time progressives are kind of shoved under a bus for the Democratic Party. And I think that they're going to be like, well, we need to put something through. Nancy's going to come out and be like, we need to put something through. Yeah. They're going to vote for the bipartisan deal. The progressives are going to, you know, stand their ground like they should. They're going to get that amount of people on the right to vote for this infrastructure deal. That's my guess, and that's not going to matter.
I agree, Dan, that's their strategy, it'll give them a scalp, as it were. It'll give them something. I guess that's a terrible old racist metaphor. It'll give them, and my apologies, it'll give them something that they can take back to their voters and say, see, we're working for you. And all that sort of thing, and they can use it as to sabotage the $3.5 trillion bill. That said, if the Progressive Caucus holds firm, I'm guessing that there's not. I mean, you know, you had a minority of Republicans in the Senate vote for this. If a minority of Republicans in the House vote for it, then the Progressive Caucus, if they hold firm, there's 100 members, more or less, to the Progressive Caucus. They will be able to force this. On the other hand, if you get a majority of Republicans in the House, then all bets are off. So, you know, what we're watching here is a very fascinating game of three-dimensional chess, and it's going to be playing out right in front of us. But, Dan, I'm not discounting your scenario at all. I think you're onto something. Ed in Chicago. Hey, Ed, thanks for watching us on Free Speech TV. What's on your mind today?
Well, Tom, I got a question for you. It kind of bookends with your guest from a little bit ago. My question is, do you think anybody in the top Democratic Party leadership will start using legitimate fear as a motivator to get out the base for 2022? And Republicans are always using fear to gin up their base to get them to show up to vote. But for some reason, the Democratic Party have always... I go back to my question. I don't see them using legitimate fear as a motivator. And I think, you know, we've gone from Lafayette Square to January 6th to states now passing laws to overturn elections. I think it's really time for the Democratic Party to start raising the flags, getting people out there, and by using fear as a motivator. Those of us who listen to you, I mean, we're talking to the base here. We know how close we are to losing our democracy, but I don't see anybody in the top leadership of the Democratic Party.
I'm hearing Joe Biden talk like this, Ed. I mean, I'm hearing all kinds of Democrats, you know, pretty flipped out about it. And Schumer made a big point yesterday about how the first thing they're going to do when they come back in September is put voting legislation front and center. I'm guessing that he's got, you know, a majority of his caucus willing to go along with a carve out into the filibuster in order to allow for at least a slimmed down voting rights bill that will block a lot of these Republican efforts.
Yeah, I guess. Well, I guess maybe it's just me then, because I'm just thinking when I see people on the talk show circuit on the Sunday morning shows and stuff, I don't get the sense of urgency from them. And my main concern is getting people to show up for 2022.
Right.
And that's so anyway. But I like,
well, and that raises another question, Ed. And I'd love to hear your thoughts on how you think this is going to play out. I'm beginning to think, in Texas and Florida and Georgia and states like this where they're passing these voter suppression laws, that the press has been. I mean, in prior elections, when Republicans passed laws like this, or like, you know, when Brian Kemp purged over 1 million people from the voting rolls in Georgia just in time for his election against Stacey Abrams, which he won by only 50,000 votes, or when, Ron DeSantis' Republican Party purged over 2 million votes in Florida in the couple of years leading up to that election that he won by 34,000 votes. I'm beginning to think that people in those states, because it's been just front and center in the news every day, calling it voter suppression. It used to be called, well, voter integrity or cleaning up the rolls or clean. I mean, we had all these euphemisms that the Republicans used that the media went along with. The media is not going along with those euphemisms anymore. And I'm thinking that, I'm guessing that the Democratic Party is betting on this, that enough people are going to be seriously pissed off that you're going to have massive voter turnout for the 2022 election.
That's my hope. But my hope is that the Democrats, instead of assuming that that's going to be the case, will create that case and legitimately so.
I'm with you.
I guess I just leave it at that. So.
Yeah. Yeah. What's the old saying? Never assume it makes an ass of you and me. It's true. Ed, thank you for the call. We can't just live on a hope and a dream. We've got to fight for what's right. Jose in Toledo, Ohio. Hey, Jose, what's up?
Hey, well, I was just watching the show, and I was going to comment on the gentleman that made the statement that education, despicable behavior in Florida and Texas. But the reality has been, and for a long time, that why would the elite want an actually educated proletariat or working class? Why would they want them to understand the trends and the movement of history? Because, you know, that would give them something to think about.
Good point.
There's no way they want education to work.
Yeah.
They just want a bunch of dummies that show up to work and cash their paycheck and go back next week. you know?
Excellent points, Jose. And I think that a lot of that you can find back, you know, when Bill Bennett was running the education department under Reagan, and they started not just dialing back on civics in schools or eliminating civics in public schools across America. Thus, we have, you know, two basically politically and history of America illiterate generations as a consequence. But also just dialing back on funding for schools. You know, we stopped building new schools in the 80s. I mean, you know, we didn't have the money anymore. You drop your top tax rate from 74% down to 25% and impose austerity. You're just not. And that's why everybody's talking about infrastructure right now. We've had 40 years where we, you know, the entire burden of infrastructure, repairing roads and everything else, has been on the states. And the federal government, outside of the little bit, you know, the piddling money from the highway, or the gas tax, you know, everything else has just been dumped on the states. So, you know, I think you're right. Thank you very much for the call.
You know, I started writing children's books that promote civic education for little bitty kids. The idea of democracy and voting. I just came out with one. Unfortunately, COVID kind of shot me in the knees on that. But
yeah, is there a website where people can find those, Jose?
I have a website. It's called Dove and Flight Press.
You want to spell it?
And DOVINFLIGHT.press.
Got it. Okay, Jose. I hope you know you get some hits. Thank you very much for the call, Lewis in Norristown, Pennsylvania. Hey, Lewis, what's on your mind?
With Republicans like DeSantis and Greg Abbott banning mass mandate and Republicans spreading disinformation on vaccines, how can we get Democrats to get up there in unison, right, and start saying the Republicans are trying to kill our kids? You know, they're trying to infect our kids with COVID. Like, how can we convince? Do you think you can, like, if you
I think
can
people are just watching the news and going, holy cow, this is not right.
Yeah, but they're not doing it. Like, do you think that if you talk to Ro Khanna, that he can convince them to start saying it, like, over and over in the news and make that their next talking point to get, like, to put Republicans on the defensive?
Yeah, it's a good suggestion. He's not on the show tomorrow. Oh, he is? Oh, he'll be with us tomorrow. You know, so maybe somebody will ask him. I'm sure the topic will come up. Lewis, thank you for that. Michael in Fresno, California. Hey, Michael, what's on your mind today?
I like to know why that they don't call these governors and everything. They're causing all these deaths, and they're known that they are. What's the difference between the fascist Nazis in Germany, where they're doing the same thing, what they're doing to the people in this country? But they're all our own citizens.
Well, there's a big difference, Michael. What the Nazis did was identify specific groups of people: Jews, gays, socialists. You know, they identified specific groups of people for extermination. I don't think that you can draw a comparison to what, you know, Abbott and DeSantis are doing. They're going after the public schools. You've got all kind. I mean, every pediatric hospital in Texas and Florida right now is overwhelmed with children with COVID. And they're trying to say, no, you can't wear masks in school, which will prevent the transmission of COVID. It's just that simple. I mean, you know, nobody is stupid enough to say, I'm going to go into the hospital, but I don't want the surgeon to wear a mask when he operates on me. Right? Nobody's that stupid. But there are apparently people who think that kids who can spread COVID to each other and then take it home and whack their parents with it, or whack people who are immune compromised or can't even get a vaccine. You know, apparently, that kind of stupid lives in Florida and Texas. And but I don't think it's going to last. I think that I think both these governors are going to have to give in and say, you know, if our schools want to have all the kids wear masks in order to protect each other and to protect the teachers, we're going to go along with it. I mean, Kay Ivey has done that, by the way, in what is it, Alabama?
Yes.
Yeah. So Kay, you know, and she's a Republican governor, and she said, oh, you know, that was a terrible mistake. You know, shouldn't have done that. And it's just the question is when, you know, when are they going to back off from this? I don't know the answer. Michael, thank you for the call. Quick math. The less your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. With higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR, all into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required. It's accessible from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. You improve efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math. See how you'll profit with NetSuite. By popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/Hartman with two N's. netsuite.com/Hartman. That's netsuite.com/Hartman. Brian in Shreveport, Louisiana. Hey, Brian, what's on your mind?
I'm tired of hearing how confused Americans are when they call into the radio show and they're saying, oh, why are these people like this? Why are these people not getting vaccinated? And I think the answer is really in our history, and that is understanding Confederate culture. Confederate culture says, look, whatever those Yankees say, we're not going to do. Hmm. And the modern Yankee today would be your Democrats or your liberals. And those would be your, you know, with the N-word, they would call you the N-lovers. That's all, too. They're just whatever we say. If the Democrats say left, they're going to say right because they're Republicans. But they're slash, a huge part of that party is slash Confederate in their mindset. That's why they were okay with the evil and cruel things that Trump did, like separating families, taking children away from their parents. That goes back to slavery. That's nothing new there. Yeah. They just shrug their shoulder and probably giggle about it. Yeah. And so now you got over and over again. Now they're like anti-vax, but it's like you're saying, I think in the long run, it's going to affect them in a big way if their children start to actually suffer behind the choices.
So far they had been lucky is not the right word, but the fact that it was only killing older people had been something that allowed them to minimize it. Now that it's killing children and young people, healthy young people, I think the whole equation changes. And I think DeSantis and Abbott are behind the curve on this. We'll see, though. Brian, thank you. TJ in Jacksonville, Florida. Hey, TJ, what's on your mind today?
Well, Ron DeSantis was here in Jacksonville today and released a little press release or something about he's going to offer mobile,
vaccination?
Monoclonal treatments for COVID-19 patients.
Right.
Okay. So he's going to have a little van, you know, like one of those blood mobiles that's going to show up for COVID patients. And then he'll put them on the bus, and they'll give him the IV. That's what he says he's going to do. Well, first of all, that treatment is only emergency use only.
Right.
It is not for severe COVID patients.
Correct.
Okay. So what you have then? But right. But it, also what you have is you have to have in order to qualify, the person has to, number one, already have been tested and found to be infected.
Right.
And number two, either be mild or moderate symptoms of COVID. Well, okay, fine. So put them on the bus, give them the treatment, give them the IV, and then what? Send them home?
Well, yeah. I mean, apparently this works. I mean, it's what Donald Trump did. It's what Chris Christie did. It's what Rudy Giuliani did. It saved all their lives.
But it doesn't work. It doesn't work. It's not a magic bullet.
Well, it's very effective. But here's the thing, TJ. You had 32,800 new cases in Florida yesterday, diagnosed.
Right.
Which means you probably had twice as many cases because those were the people that were sick enough to show up and say, I feel terrible. Tell me what I've got. Right.
Right.
And we know that, you know, a significant percentage, probably somewhere between 20% and 50% of people who get this disease don't even know that they have it or they think they've got a cold. You've got. If you're going to do mobile buses with monoclonal antibodies, which is a half hour to an hour infusion.
Oh, he's only going to do one.
He's got one bus?
One he just
he showed up and say in Jacksonville with one bus? And, no. And you got 32,000 people a day who are sick enough that they're showing.
That's what I'm saying is that this is not even it's a typical. We're not really going to do anything, but it sounds good, doesn't it?
Why doesn't he show up if he's going to send buses into communities, into neighborhoods? Why doesn't he send buses with vaccines?
Good idea. But no, that's not what he's going to do. Also, I want to remind you something. I know you know everything about St. Reagan, but Ronald Reagan is who turned medicine into a business. Ronald Reagan said, we're going to let the doctors and the medical people do what they do best, and we're going to send business people in to take care of the business end of medicine.
Oh,
and that's when medicine became for-profit. Greed is good.
There you go. TJ, we're out of time.
Tom Hartman program.
Carl in Napa, California. Hey, Carl, what's on your mind?
Hey, Tom. Thanks for taking my call. So my question is this. As I hear your callers talk about multinational corporations, and I work for a multinational corporation. Separately, I'm also a licensed clinical psychologist. Separately, I'm also a vet. Since I was a vet, I haven't felt as proud to work for a place that I have now since I work for a large multinational corporation. My question, is it possible that the role of multinational corporations, which emphasize diversity and inclusion, just all of the principles that are important to me, if Trump had been elected, my allegiance would be to that multinational corporation. And I'm just curious what you see as the future unfolding, not only of the role of these major multinational corporations. Tom, when I'm on a group call across the world, there's none of the baloney about, you know, vax logic or any of this silly divisive stuff in America. So right. What do you see as the future of multinational corporations who increasingly emphasize their social responsibility piece, and they're doing it increasingly well?
Yeah, large corporations are you know, really doing a good job and in the forefront of, you know, diversity training and sensitivity and trying to hire, you know, diverse workforces and things like that. And that's, you know, generally speaking, a good thing. On the other hand, and there's nothing wrong with companies doing business across national borders. The problem comes when they start behaving in a monopolistic fashion, when they are predatory, when they are destructive of competition. And, you know, that's really a whole different thing. Then you're getting into the realm of monopoly. But I'm not sure what your question was, Carl, other than to praise the company you're working for.
Well, they are a great company. But was somebody on your call had said democracy versus capitalism? And I really have been wrestling with that in my head. And I think I don't know that.
Well, democracy is a political system and capitalism is an economic system.
But if you pose that question to a Republican and let them pick a side, I don't see that being as problematic.
They will always pick capitalism, actually.
Yeah, they will always pick capitalism.
Right.
And so I'm saying, is there a future where major multinational corporations step up and say, stop. I don't know what's going on in America, but this is insanity. Like, if we go back to our offices, it's expected we'll be grown-ups, we'll be vaccinated, and we'll wear a mask.
You see this with a lot of the European corporations, particularly the ones out of Northern Europe. And part of it might be, and Germany, for example. You know, in Germany, they wrote into their constitution after World War II that any corporation with more than 1,000 employees, their board of directors has to be 50% made up of people who are who work in those factories, who are union members. So the union basically has half of the board of directors of every major German corporation. And so those corporations tend to behave in a much more socially responsible fashion. You see similar things, not exactly like that, but you see similar things in the Scandinavian countries. So, you know, I don't know where your corporation is based, but, you know, if it's a multinational. Say what?
Germany.
Yeah, Germany. There you go. You know, so that has an awful lot to do with it. It kind of sets and defines the corporate culture. By the way, one other thing that I wanted to add is two things that I just want to toss into the mix for our conversation here, and then back to your phone calls. Number one, I'm assuming most of you have probably seen on the news the pictures out of Tennessee, I believe it was, maybe Kentucky, but I'm pretty sure it was Tennessee. I mix those two states up all the time in my head, where there was a bunch of guys who looked like neo-Nazis, basically, screaming at school board members, "We know who you are. We know where you live." You know, guys with tattoos on their necks and shaved heads. And the media says parents are upset. I don't think these people are parents. I think they're Nazis. You know, I think they're Trumpies. And, you know, and I think somebody in the media needs to look into this, number one. And number two, if we're going to vaccinate the world, there's a very easy way to do it without taxing the billionaires, although I'm all in favor of that. And that is to pass these so-called TRIPS waivers, which every country in the world is in favor of except Germany. And Germany is holding it up because the UN operates on consensus. One country says no, that kills the whole thing. It's not a the UN is not majority rule. It's consensus. And consensus means everybody in or nothing happens. And the TRIPS waivers would say to companies like AstraZeneca and Pfizer and Johnson & Johnson and Moderna, we're going to let factories, vaccine factories in third world countries manufacture your vaccine. And they are going to pay you a royalty for your vaccine. You're not only not going to lose money, you're going to make some money. It's just that that royalty is going to be a few cents per shot rather than $50 per shot or whatever it is. And every country in the world wants to go along with this except Germany. And you know, we've had several conversations with Lori from Ralph Nader's citizen.org, Global Trade Watch, tradewatch.org, I guess is the website. We just, you know, we need to do it.
You've been listening to Tom Hartmann. For audio and video archives, visit tomhartmann.com.